Hello, everybody out there in radio, TV, and internet land. This is a call to action. I'm your host, Alex C. Habersham, with the pleasure today of interviewing and discussing and interacting and fellowshipping with somebody I've known before he or I had all this gray hair. I mean, rather than being totally gray, it was totally black. So, it's just such a pleasure. But, one thing that between every strand of those hairs is success and life experiences and accomplishments providing information and being concerned about the community, caught in history. So, I'm just so pleased and so happy to have with me today Mr. Harold Michael Harvey. Who's got long standing in the Macon community, although he does not live here now, but his roots started right here in Macon. The reason I know is because he and I, worked together several years ago, but he has gone on to be a renowned author and publisher. Now, I mean those in two different respects. He's an author because he writes books. And he's a publisher because he publishes books, and not only for himself, but for other authors and what have you. He has endeavored and made it his business to write books that make a difference. They can entertain and educate, which is extremely important to our community now more than ever. So take it away, Michael.
Well, first of all, let me say I am honored and humbled to be your guest on a call to action today. It warms my heart to be on your program. And you mentioned that in addition to being an author, I'm also a publisher. Well, you know where I get that idea from. That comes from Alex C. Habersham. I remember. Must have been early 1970s. I was downtown doing something, probably looking for work. And I passed you coming out of the bank on Cherry Street. I took about three steps past you. We spoke, but I took about three steps past you. And I had this thought in the back of my head. And a few weeks later, you came out and started publishing The Macon Courier. And at that time, there had been several efforts to have a black newspaper in Macon. Now, I can go back to the early 1960s when J. Lowell Ware brought a paper to town. And of course, then Bill Randall started a paper. And so there was some confusion as to whether the city could have two black newspapers. And Ware eventually left town. And then the paper that the Randalls founded eventually fizzled. And about 10 years later, you came along. And of course, you held that space. You still hold that space, although the Macon Courier, as I recall, you sold it. But the Black Pages are still providing much needed information to the Macon and Middle Georgia community, information that everybody needs to know about. I'm a subscriber. And one of the ways I keep up with what's taking place in my hometown is through the Middle Georgia Black Pages. Back in the late 2008 or 9, I published my first book, which was a novel set in, of all places, Macon, Georgia. And I went through the traditional publishing route, but after a few months, I found that I was doing all the work. And that the publisher was making all the money, and all the suggestions I had for marketing, they were just falling on deaf ear. And so my wife and I flew up to New York, and I went in and I met with the publisher, and I think I kind of got a little heated. I dressed the publisher up and down on one side and back down the other, and stormed out of the office. And before I could get down from the top floor down to the ground floor in that big New York building, my phone went off. And they promised to do all the things that I had asked them to do. And another 3 months passed and no action. So I started reading. And I reflect upon what I saw you do. I've never forgotten the day I saw you come out of the bank on Cherry Street. And I never forgot the fact that shortly after that, you were in business as a publisher. And so I read everything I could about publishing. And of course, I didn't need an agent. So I went in, I negotiated myself out of the contract I had with them. And my wife and I started the Cascade Publishing House. And we initially just to publish my books, and then other people found out about us, and we have I've ghostwritten 21 books for other authors in addition to the 7 that I've written for myself, and of course we published all of those books. And our goal in publishing is we want the book to look just like it came out of a New York publishing house. So, I researched and reviewed them very, very carefully. And hopefully my books look the same way. You can't tell the difference. So that's how I got involved in this. And of course, I've always had this love and passion for my hometown. I didn't really want to leave town, but I just couldn't make any money. And so I left, went back to school, and but Macon never left my heart. And so I've always been concerned about it. And my first book, as I tell you, a novel, was set in Macon. I actually started writing that book in the early 1970s. And when I left town, I stopped writing. And one Christmas or Thanksgiving, just before the turn of the century, I was home visiting my mom, and she had big dinner laid out, and we had eaten and fellowshiped and had a good time. And my wife and I was packing up food and gifts, and to bring back to Atlanta. And my mama kind of sauntered down the hallway, and she said, "I was in the attic the other day, and I ran across this shoebox with your baseball cards in them." And she says, "And your manuscript's in there too." And she says, "You never did finish that book." I said, "Well, Mama, one day I'm gonna finish it." But I was real busy practicing law at the time, and I didn't know that I would ever have time. So what I did is, when I got back home next day, I went downtown. I filed it away. The title I had back in that day was Paper Puzzle. So I filed it in the file cabinet drawer under P for Paper Puzzle. Forgot it was in there. And some years later, when I was closing my practice and I was waiting for other colleagues to come and take files that I had, I decided, I might as well drop these typewritten pages into the computer, because back in the 1970s, we didn't have the word processor was just coming into being, but everything was done on a typewriter. So I had this paper manuscript. So I spent my time putting it into the computer. And of course, after I'd gotten home, and I still had forgotten about it for several years. And then I was playing around on the internet. Internet was kind of new then, but I was playing around, and I saw that I think it was like True TV was looking for the next great mystery novel. So I said, Paper Puzzle, murder mystery. I could win that contest. So I followed the guidelines, submitted the first, I believe they wanted the first 100 pages or 10 pages or something. I submitted it. And before the deadline for the submissions were completed, someone from the submission office called and asked me if it was a short story or a full-length novel. I said, "Well, it's a full-length novel, although it's not finished." "Well, can you finish in 4 months? Because they're calling in December and they're going to make announcements in April. And I can't do it. I can't finish it. I don't think I can finish it in 4 months." And I said, "No." So this is a very serious work, and I don't want to rush it to complete it. And they said, "Well, you're going to have to withdraw your submission." And so I did, and I was dejected. And then about a week later, I had this little voice in the back of my head to say, "Well, they wouldn't have called you if they were not interested in your story." And so I started working a little bit on it, and finally, around about April or July of that year, I pulled my wife's coattail and I said, "Hey, I think if I could find a place in the mountains and go by myself and spend a year, I can finish this novel. I think we're on to something." And so she's never said it but again since. But that time she said, "Okay, if you think you can, you go." Never question me, never raise any doubts about it. She immediately said, "If you think you can, go." So we went out and we found a place, where I could live. And it was just, I lived like a hermit, just bare minimum. And I got up every morning at 2 o'clock and I worked till the sun came up. My goal was 1,000 words a day. And usually when by the time I could see the sun peeping through the curtains, I'm pretty close. Sometimes I'm like 900 words. I would keep going until I hit 1,000. And sometimes, because I kept going, I might have ended up with 1,500 words one morning, 1,200 words. And so, lo and behold, 4 months later, I'm working, and all of a sudden I hear this voice, end the story right here, right now, and bingo. I stood up, and I was shouting. It was like I had given birth to a baby, and the mountains that I was looking at outside of my window was shouting with me. And I knew I had hit a home run. And so we got Paper Puzzle published, and it was a real good success. Have a sequel in the works, but I just haven't worked on it in 5 or 6 years.
Give us a plot of Paper Puzzle quickly.
Paper Puzzle is a murder mystery, and is told through the eyes of two newspaper reporters. One reporter works for the weekly black paper in town, and the other reporter is white and works for the white daily in town.
Wow.
And although they're in the same industry, okay, has never been any social or professional communication or contact between them. When these murders are taking place, and the white journalist, his life and liberty is being threatened. He got hauled into court because the judge wants to know what he knows. And so all of a sudden he realizes that the person who had the missing pieces of the puzzle was the black guy who worked for the weekly newspaper. And in order for him to solve the problem, he had to join forces with the black journalist. And so then they develop a friendship. They realized they had more things in common than the skin color that was the difference between them. The only thing that was different about them was the skin color. And so I worked them through these social and racial mores that we all grew up in the 1920s. And when they come together, they solve the problem, solve the mystery. My most recent work, really, is what I want to talk about because I'm really excited about it, is Fantasy Five. And what this book is about the election of the first five black members to the Macon City Council. Now, so what I do is I go back and trace the history of black people in Macon, Georgia from 1823, when black people were considered chattel property. They were chattel. We were chattel. We were property. Had no hope, there was no reasonable person would say that a piece of chattel slavery would one day in Macon, Georgia, grow up to be an elected official in city government, let alone a mayor. So that's why throughout the book, I use a lot of the chapter titles uses lottery monikers or identifiers. So you have Fantasy Five, you have Powerball. You have Scratch Off, you have Mega Millions. And so what I do is I tell the story. I bring us all the way up through the ending of the enslavement period when Henry McNeil Turner was very active in Macon and served Bibb County, represent Bibb County in the Georgia House of Representatives, along with 39 other former enslaved people throughout Georgia. And there were three people in the state Senate. And of course, one day their white legislator's brethren came in and with at the point of a gun chased them out of the legislature. And there was no more black state legislators in the General Assembly from Bibb County until David Lucas and Billy Randall win election to newly created seats in the Georgia General Assembly. And that was in 1974 when they were elected. And in 75, the first thing they do when they're sworn in January of 75 is they drop a bill in the hopper to create ward districts for city council races in Macon. And that made it possible. The way the map was drawn, it called for at least two blacks would have been on that 15-member council. We ended up with five, four black guys and one lady. So we're coming up on the 50th anniversary next year. So these guys campaigned through the spring and summer of 1975. They were sworn in on December the 9th, 1975. The city of Macon was founded on December the 8th, 1823. And so we're coming up on this 50th anniversary, and I started a few years ago talking to people about this idea I had to honor and pay tribute to the first five. And, nobody knew who they were, or if they knew one or two, they didn't know all five. So essentially those five people are all but forgotten in history. And if you or my generation go off the scene, they will completely be forgotten. Nobody will know that they ever existed.
Right.
And Macon has had black elected officials in city and county government now for going on 50 years. And so it's almost seems as if we've always had black representation, but we didn't. And so in talking to Henry Ficklin, Reverend Ficklin, and Herbert Dunant about my idea, what they suggested to me is you just can't talk about those five and that summer of the election. You have to include the civil unrest and the civil rights movements that was taking place, starting with the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King and moving into 1975. And so that required me to go back and do some additional research. The person they said I need to talk about was Reverend Gassaway. I don't know if you remember when the was it the Macon, the Black Liberation Front organized a group in Macon, and both Ficklin and Dunant said, so we were the young people who were pushing for integration and for change. And we thought we were doing something, but those guys were really on the far left, and they were bringing some energy to the table, and the city had to grapple with that. Well, so this election in 75 comes out of all of that turmoil, and we relive that in Fantasy Five, and take us through the turmoil that shows why it was necessary for blacks to be able to represent each other on the council. And one of the first things they did, and it's similar to what the commission, so several commissioners did last week. Well, let's back up. So the summer of 75, I worked in the Hope campaign. Hope was the first black person to run for mayor of the city of Macon. He had come to town, I believe, in 1970 from Brunswick, Georgia, where in 1965 he had become the first black person to run for mayor of Brunswick, Georgia. And in that race, he got into the runoff. And a few years ago, I interviewed the first black mayor of Brunswick, whose name is Carnell Harvey. As far as I know, we're not related. He said he was a fifth grader in 65 when Hope ran for mayor, and that the town was so excited, and that they actually went to bed that night thinking that Hope had won. And when they woke up the next morning, discovered that that was a runoff. And so, of course, in the runoff, same thing happened in 1975 that happened in 1965 with Brunswick. Whites who had not voted in the primary came out and voted in the runoff. and he got trounced, just like what happened to us in 75. But that summer, being on the Hope campaign, he called me his statistician. But essentially, what I did to Hope was I was a pollster. I had taken a course in statistics at Tuskegee. I was a political science major, and so I had developed my own little poll. It was, I just had my own little system, and I would gauge the impact that Hope had wherever he went and spoke. And then when we got in our meetings, I would say, this worked, this didn't work. When you talk to this group, maybe you might want to highlight this right here more. And so I had the perspective of the five blacks running for city council, because everywhere Hope was, they were. And so I watched the campaign up close. And now the following year, I'm back to the newspaper job over at Macon Courier, and you send me down to City Hall, and I'm covering these five as they are engaging with their white colleagues on the Macon City Council for the first time. So one of the very first things that the new mayor, Mayor Buckner Melton, wanted to do was to spend $250,000 on an antebellum mansion. They wanted to renovate it. And to a man and woman, black man and woman on that council, they all said no. And I think the battle took about 6 or 7 months before Melton finally gave in. But at that time, they were able to get three other of their colleagues to go along with them. In a 15-member council, you needed 8 votes in order to carry a measure or the feeder measure. So they were able to get three other of their colleagues to go along with them, and they didn't do that. And how that is a parallel to what happened in Macon last week is this this memorial that the Daughters of the Confederacy wanted to erect for Mr. Bingham. You had two council members who just stood fast and said, "Oh no, that can't happen in this town." And so one of the things that I found that first group of council people did, they did two things. Let's go back. There were two primary issues in the black community in 1975. One, the city had 90 miles of unpaved streets. That was a minute. They had the unpaved street total from here to Atlanta. If you can graphically imagine that, that's how many miles of unpaved streets were in Macon, Georgia, 1975. And the other issue was substandard housing stuff. Well, Melton came in. Hope was said we got to pave the streets. So Melton addressed the issue too. And when he became elected, he floated this bond issue, and that's how we got the streets paved. And the council did initially attack the substandard housing matter. They in fact even called out, named the major slumlords in the town. One was a very prominent divorce lawyer at that town, had his name plastered over the Macon Telegraph. But the substandard housing issue, it lost its energy. One of the things I did while I was researching the book is I drove back through Unionville and Tyvee, Durisville, Bellevue, and Botley Crossing. And the substandard housing stock in the city of Macon is probably double what it was in 1975. So that issue has not been addressed. And so I conclude the book by challenging the city to use the purse, to use the Powerball at their disposal, and really get serious about developing housing in those communities. Because you develop the housing, you got to build more schools in the communities now. There's not a community in the city of Macon, Bibb County, Georgia, that was in the segregated era, a segregated community exclusively lived in by black folks, that offers a black family a good place to raise their children today.
So talk about your book signing,
Book
and
signing.
let people know where they can find other information as it relates to the books you publish.
Okay. You can get this book here and several of them at the Golden Bough on Second Street. My book's also available at the Tubman Museum in Macon. And there's a book signing schedule for the Miller George Regional Library in Washington Avenue on November the 20th at 4 o'clock. I will discuss my book with the Miller Georgia Regional African American Historical Committee on November the 20th at 4 o'clock. And so you'll be able to, after that discussion and question and answer session, you'll be able to purchase a copy of the book. It has a lot of information in it. It goes from the beginning of the city to 1979, but it concludes with a with an overview of what those guys accomplished, what they weren't able to accomplish, and what has lingered. I even call out my brother because at one point in time, he served as a councilman in that Unionville District 4 area. So neither Vernon Coburn, neither Gerald Harvey, neither the guy who's on the commission now, can't call his name right now, none of them has addressed that issue. And if there is, Macon solved the problem of revitalizing downtown finally. It took 50 years to do that, but they've done that. Macon is a thriving, has a thriving downtown area now. People in Atlanta talk about going down to Macon clubbing on the weekend. It's so popular. That's where you can get my books. I hope to look forward to seeing you guys at Washington Memorial Library, the library on Washington Avenue, on November 20th at 4 o'clock.
All the action. I'm your host, Alex Appleton. I'm having an interview, Mr. Harold Michael Harvey, who not only is an author, but he's also a publisher. And he'll be in our town on the 20th. Be there at Washington Memorial at 4 o'clock. Have a great day.
www.makingblackpages.com